Hey guys, thanks for coming to our presentation today on how to give your conversation superpowers. My name is Stephen Abrahams. I'm on the Skype team at Microsoft. I have been working on Skype for about 3 years now, and used to work on a product called MSN Messenger, another chat messaging app that Microsoft ran for a little while. And today we really want to give you a view of where things are going on Skype in terms of our conversational platform. And I'm going to bring up one of our partners, Oren Jacob, who worked with the past year or so on bots and other types of AIs, and really give you hopefully an overview of just sort of one perspective on how to build conversational bots. But I want to kick that off with a quick question. Who here knows that you can talk to Doctor Who on Skype? Raise your hands. Not enough of you. Go get Skype, talk to Doctor Who. Here we go.
Hi, Build. I'm Alex Ayling, head of digital studios here at BBC Worldwide. We wanted to do a bot because we here at the BBC have got access to some of the most amazing IP, and we're always on the lookout for new, exciting, innovative ways of changing storytelling and changing the way that we engage with our audiences and expanding beyond our long-form television shows. One of the best things for me is the ability that we're giving to fans to finally experience what it might be like to become the Doctor's companion. We want to work with really exciting partners who can offer something brand new for our audiences. And we wanted to work with Skype because we saw an opportunity to move the needle and create a conversational bot that had never been done before. We've aligned this bot with the current season of Doctor Who that's on television at the moment because we want it to feel of the moment. It's an amazing treat for current fans, but by partnering with Skype and putting it onto their platform, it gives us the opportunity to reach a brand new set of fans that might want to enjoy Doctor Who in a whole new way.
So, before we invite Oren up here, I want to talk to you a little bit about our perspective on why we think bots are important. You know, the last year has been a bell curve of hype, bot hatred, a lot of people wondering whether or not conversational interfaces would ever work. And I wanted to kind of give you our perspective on it because we're all in on bots. We're all in on conversational AI. We think it's really important that people think about it differently than they think about websites, than they think about apps, and really challenge this question of whether or not how you think about how users engage today is this traditional funnel or not. And so, you know, as we move forward and as we kind of create bots together, you really want to engage people at different times, at different points of the process. And, you know, just creating awareness, converting them, and having them come out the other end isn't the goal any longer. It's really about how you tap into a lot more attributes. So you all are building the next generations of apps, of bots. Here's something for you to think about as you're building these new experiences. Everybody's going to come to your app or your bot with some sense of a desire, an intent, thing that they're trying to accomplish. It may be, what's the weather today? How do I get to work? Entertain me. And it's really important that you take that opportunity to engage them right away in an open-ended way, and then start to leverage everything that you learned from that point forward with that user and start to think about what behaviors they show, what preferences for types of content, what things they ask for, the actions they take, and how much loyalty they have. If you proactively notify, do they come back and actually use the bot, or do they just unsubscribe from that? So we call this intent-driven intelligence. And it's really what we think will make better bots if we all kind of understand these things, if we all work together to model this type of behavior. And so as we go forward with our partners, and we have many great partners, many of whom are here at Build with us, we want to spend the time with you to sit down and kind of walk through how we create that intent-driven intelligence for your app, for your bot. We're different that way. We want to take the time, understand the goals of your business, understand what other ways people engage with you, and then really find the way that your bot should work within the context of all of that. And we want to give you a lot of services and ways that you, of course, can connect not just to Skype, but also to a whole network of channels, to Cortana, and to all the cognitive services which help drive understanding, help build that knowledge base of intent. So the last year, I spent a lot of time talking to people who build on the platform, learning what they're doing, what they want out of a platform like Skype. It's a consumer platform. It's a little bit different than, you know, building something for Skype for Business, for Teams, for Slack. And, you know, consequently, we have created, you know, templates and things that work across all of those, even across Facebook, Kick. You know, it's possible to create a chatbot once and, you know, of course, you know, push out to all those different channels. But we really wanted to focus on, you know, what makes you successful, not just what makes it really an awesome authoring environment. And so, you know, we acknowledge that building on an open platform is super important. So, you know, we're not fussy about that. If you come with your natural language processing, fine. You want to come with different storage than what we have, fine. We want you to build a bot that you're comfortable with, supporting, deploying, evolving over time. So we also know that you want a lot of control over the user experience. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that as we move forward with our core IA, with the UX platform that we have for bots, that it really takes into account the needs of our partners. We also know that it's really difficult to be found within conversations. Conversations are usually one or two clicks away from where brands and services and bots are. So we really want to, and as we go forward, you'll see some of the ways that Skype's making it possible for your service, the intent and the intelligence in that intent to be discovered within conversations. And really, the more intelligent your bot, the more likely it is to be discovered. Lastly, we've all kind of wanted for a while, and now we have the ability to put Skype pretty much on any property. It can be on your canvas, it can be on your website, it can be in your app. So now all of the power of what's in the Skype app can be available to you, including all of our rich media cards, typing indicators, all the things that people can experience with a chatbot can now be part of what they do on your website. And it's just a few lines of code. So let's talk about a few of these things, and then we're going to jump into some of these things. If you stop by our booth, you could have gotten a demo. What we've noticed is that people really want, when they're developing their bot, to have the ability to have rich GUI experiences. And it's not because chat's not a great place to start a conversation. It's really about that there's oftentimes your app needs a way that you can bring up, you know, a picker, create a settings dialog. And so we really want to give you ways that users can explore the depth and breadth of your service, browse, search, select content. And then, of course, we want to bridge those users' interactions with your bot to groups. So Skype add-ins really are the way that you can extend your bot into group conversations. It makes it possible for people to share content, play games. If you have an app that helps a group make a decision about something, those are great examples. These are little HTML5 web apps. They can be hosted in Azure. We give you some a little bit of JavaScript that makes it possible for you to push content nicely packaged on a beautiful card back into the conversation. And consequently, you actually start to then have a much richer view that can be coupled with your own mobile website of what users are doing. Lastly, you can start to use your bot as a way of just kind of sending and receiving messages for this plugin. So if people do something in it and you want to communicate conversationally back into group chat, you can do that with the Skype add-in with your bot. Secondly, we've added quick actions and responses. Quick actions really give you a way for your bot to push the conversation forward with people not having to type. You can suggest common responses. You can open up web links. You can perform actions in Skype, like calling people. And so you'll start to see basically a lot of our actions that were previously on cards move into this, these little suggestion bubbles above the text input field. One of the most exciting things to me is the amount of time people spend in Skype connecting one-to-one over video. We do nearly a trillion minutes of calling a year. That's over 3 billion minutes a day. Skype's one of the main reasons that people use Skype is really for connecting in a very immersive way. So we've put together a way that you now, as a bot developer, can create either using live action video, or if you're so inclined, 3D, or GIFs, a full talking bot with the power of our full duplex video and graphics, really everything that Skype supports. This is tied all into the same services that our chatbots use. So you can connect Lewis, you can connect our cognitive services, you can do emotion detection, facial analysis. And if you stop by our booth, we'll give you some examples of bots that we've built that do this. In this case, Andy is an interview coach, and she asks you questions. A lot of people take their first interview over Skype, and then she gives you feedback on your responses, your body language, your facial. She does a little facial analysis, and she gives you back a report. So I think this is really the next wave of bots inside of Skype, and we're very excited to give you our SDK, which is right now in developer preview. We'll have to get your feedback on it, and see. Hopefully next year at this time, there'll be lots of you who are thinking about how to create a video bot. These work both in one-to-one and in group calls. Some of the scenarios you could think about are coaching, learning, karaoke. We have a fun karaoke bot that you pick a song and you start singing, creates a nice video that can be shared out to Facebook or Twitter. So come by and check that out. And lastly, I just want to talk about second to last thing I want to talk about is how easy it is now to embed Skype on your site. I think one of the things you think about is like my brand inside a messaging app. That's great. That gives me reach. But what can I do to kind of introduce bots to my customers when they're coming through my experience? Well, now you can embed Skype on your site. You can control the colors, the header, the footer. You can really make it feel much more like your brand delivering this. And we provide you this all for free. With just a few lines of code, you can be up and running. And tomorrow, you can be putting your bot on your website. And then the Harman Kardon Invoke. So we announced this a couple days ago. We're very excited about this device. Really, this is the first example of being able to call via Skype on an internet-connected device. There's going to be many new form factors here, and really, this is just the beginning. You can call people, you can call bots. We have a meditation bot that you can call from the Harman Kardon before you're going to bed at night. You can have it walk you through a meditation exercise. There's really a lot of stuff that you can start to think about your bot for these types of devices, but also if you are somebody who's building one of these devices, connect with me afterwards and I can hook you up with the right people to help you put Skype on your device. Lastly, before we jump into talking to Oren, I just want to plug our new dev portal, dev.skype.com, and we have a Skype dev bot now called Skype Dev Buddy. And right now, Skype Dev Buddy gives you a lot of information about building bots on Skype. You can ask it questions like, what cards do you have? It also is really a great way for you to escalate issues directly to the team. It's backed by my bot studio here in Palo Alto, down south in Palo Alto, they're really anxious to, you know, hear from people at Build today. We've released it to everybody here, what they think about our platform. But moreover, as you're starting to build your bots, if you have questions, feel free to use Skype Dev Buddy. So now let's jump really into this notion of building these intelligence into conversations.
I'm Heston Blumenthal. Basically, I'm a chef and a big kid. And I've spent my life experimenting with food, just questioning everything. I felt for a long time now that we're becoming slaves to recipes. And if you remove a recipe from us, we kind of don't know what to do. What we need to do to be creative is unzip our protective coating of fear, and you can free yourself up from being chained to a recipe.
That's when creativity really explodes.
With this bot, I'm so excited because I can now share some of the wonderful, magical discoveries that I've learned over the last 20 years. I'll be challenging an awful lot of accepted kitchen wisdom and sharing tips and techniques, a little nuggets of gold in the kitchen that will enable you to be able to open your cupboard or open your fridge, see what you've got and go, right, I'm going to cook this now. I'm hoping that I can also find out about some of your wonderful discoveries and we might learn a load of new stuff together. So I'm incredibly excited about this.
Does anybody like to cook at home? Yeah? Just a few of you? Go get the Heston bot. It's not a bunch of recipes. I'm sure you probably all have a lot of recipe books. I have a lot of recipe books. I never look at them. He's really about learning the basics of cooking. His point of view is that we've all become slave to the recipe. We've sort of lost the ability to kind of look at food, listen to cracking vegetables. So one thing that this bot does is really just sort of get back to the basics, learn about tips and techniques of cutting vegetables, meat, what it should sound like, what it should look like. And his personal motto in life is question everything, which is kind of ideal for a bot if you think about it. Where are we going with this? Well, Skype's always been a way that you can talk to your family and friends, of course. Now you can talk to these kind of superstars and fictional characters, and they're all enabled through artificial intelligence. So today we're going to talk about both of these bots that we built, one for this chef, Heston Blumenthal, and one for this character from science fiction, Doctor Who. And I'm going to invite on stage with me Oren Jacob, who's the CEO of Pollstring.
Stephen. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Welcome to your third day of your show. Let me give us 2 seconds of background.
Yes, please do, Oren.
So I'm the CEO and co-founder of Pullstring. We've been around for just under 6 years in the space of computer conversation. We make the Pullstring platform available to folks just like you to build text and voice-based bots on Skype and other platforms as well. And I've done that now for several years, broadly speaking. Both Heston and Doctor Who were built in the Pullstring platform. We'll talk more about that in the show. And it's 2 seconds about my life before getting the field of computer conversation. I was in the field of computer animation, and for 20 years was at Pixar, making movies like Toy Story and Finding Nemo, and director of software there and a CTO at the studio as well. So having spent 2 decades helping artists make things move for emotion, I now spent 5 years making artists make things talk for emotion in the space of computer conversation. And I think that's a broad emphasis of what we tried to do with Pullstring, is to allow folks who are both computer scientists and writers be able to contribute to dialogue and construction of it interactively in the space of bots. So there you go.
Awesome. You know, Oren, it's been really fun working with your team on these bots. They really are amazing. I think what I'd like to share with the audience today is some of the learnings we've had building these. I mean, these bots, these are really new things. Nobody ever, you know, like movies have been around for a while. Bots are new.
Right.
Interacting with bots through a messaging platform like Skype is new. You know, let's really give the audience a view of some of the things that, as we kind of get going, building one of these bots, what do we do to plan for these conversations that are inevitably going to happen with the bot?
I got a couple points here that I want to make in this talk, given the question that Stephen has asked there. And the first one has to do with writing for a specific character and specific advocacy. So, well, Heston Blumenthal is a nonfiction, I think he's actually a real guy, who's in, who, by the way, who has heard of Heston? Raise your hand. Try again. Who here is from the UK or has been to the UK in your life?
Okay.
If you've been there and you've had food from England in like the past decade or so, he's influenced what you've eaten, broadly speaking. So as a strong advocate for the culinary forward movement in the UK, Heston stands apart in that regard. But he's a real person. And Doctor Who, well, maybe you think he's real, we're not really sure, but probably fictional. And in both cases, though, the reason I think it's a good example to put both of those up in a slide or two ago is, in both cases, understanding the advocacy, the backstory, the motivation behind who Doctor Who is as a fictional character, and the same set of questions behind who Heston is as a nonfiction, a real person as well, too, allows one to approach creating a bot from specificity. So when Heston is nerding out about what to do with an egg and how to use this magical protein in your kitchen in thousands of ways you can't possibly imagine right now, that's true to who Heston is. Because that is as specific to the character as it is, when those of us in the audience or the users engage with a character or bot that way, even though it comes out a very specific pro-kitchen or pro-time travel advocacy, depending on who you're talking to, the general principles and themes and rules we apply to ourselves. It is through specificity that one reaches the generality of audience. You can't write a generic chef advocate or a generic time-traveling fictional guy. Like, that's not interesting. You can write Heston, and you can write who. Does that make sense? As agenda. So that's sort of a calling to folks out here who are building bots in the world, which I hope, who here, by the way, has tried to build a bot in their life or ever talked to one? Raise your hands. There we go, okay. So since you're all here in the space in general, taking that approach to how you construct and build and design in the space of finding the specific nature, the word choice, the phrasing, and the motivation behind the bot you're building as well, too, is a great way to help you efficiently build a thing, but also have your audience take a very general set of themes from it back and forth. Next point I want to touch on has to do with partly content I talked about, intent. So let's talk about the middle word, intent. Who here is a Lewis API user or aware of Lewis or stopped by the Lewis booth? Okay. So Lewis is a great intent recognition engine. Thank you, Microsoft, for that party. And the big tech giants, Microsoft included, we're in their space here today, have focused a lot on machine learning intent recognition. And I celebrate that, but it's actually about a third of the problem. It's an important third, and I'm glad that Lewis is available. But if you only nerd out about intent, you've completely forgotten content. So intent's understanding what's said to you, content's what you say back. And those two things form a conversation. So when Steve and I are talking back and forth, or I'm answering questions afterwards, you know, down on the floor, whatever it is, I have to both understand what's said and then respond back. And I think it's very important to consider those two things with like even amounts of your budget, to be very blunt about it, and even amounts of your headcount and time and energy spent on both understanding what's said, that's recognizing intent from users coming in, and responding back with the content in a specific form. Now those two pieces, content and intent, are sort of a yin and a yang, but together, when those things are constructed and designed in the context of each other, that's when you really achieve, I think, reaching for a human level of fidelity in computer conversation.
Let me jump in for a second.
Yeah.
By the way, Where did you grow up?
In the beach in Southern California.
Oh, really?
But I talk like a New Yorker. I don't know why that is. I've always talked too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. First grade.
It's great that I can just sort of randomly jump in and ask Warren questions. You know, and I think we expect the same thing from bots. We don't always. Sorry, you weren't planning for that, were you?
It was not on script.
It was not on the script. No, but I think that's one of the genius things that we're able to do is these things called global interjections. Do you want to talk a little bit about what they are and how people should think about them?
Yeah, a pretty fundamental difference between designing in conversation or designing any GUI you've ever built, for that matter, or text-based form, is that conversation does randomly switch back and forth. It's sort of piecewise linear. We'll talk about content intent. Where were you born? Back to the talk again as well, too. So each of those little sections is sort of related to each other, but you can swap topics. Are you hungry, by the way? I could use a sandwich. And it's like, go there. Everybody get a T-shirt? And then come back to the talk as well, too. This happens all the time when you're sitting with your family, friends, or talking to other humans out at lunch today. And when building a bot, text, or voice form, you have to contemplate that circumstance because it will totally happen to you. It's in that moment, and the choice you make as a designer or a builder, how to handle an interjection in the conversation, and then choose to return back or not, with state maintained or not, depending on what you're doing, is a very important design choice. And I'll emphasize that before we give one or two more examples, because it is at the point when you're talking to another person. Who's going to SeaTac this afternoon to fly home somewhere? Raise your hand. Okay. When you do, go to a bar, find a random stranger, and strike up a conversation. Just try to do it for a second. And as you do that, sort of awkward, like, who are you? Why are you talking to me? This is kind of weird. You're trying to find commonality in the conversation. Oh, you like the Seahawks too? Well, I'm a Niners fan. Oh, yeah, I'm a Seahawks fan? We can talk or we can't. Like, you'll arrange your adjustment. Arsenal, Chelsea, I don't know. Like, what's going on here, back and forth? Until you find a place that's common and you can meet. And as you grope through that, when you're, imagine how awkward it can be finding a stranger to talk about. That is an example of this topics reaching that we do back and forth. And the response back, when it matches you, is largely magical. That's the person saying, I like watching European football as well, too. You do as well? Let's talk about that. Like, oh, this is great. We can share a beer now. But you found that place where you've connected. And that's an important consideration in design, because if you don't handle that well, you're blowing off your user in a pretty rude way. So to that point now.
That's a great segue. But, you know, I think we should really bring in Scott, who is the writer, to show some examples. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
One big challenge with Doctor Who is he has a very established world. He has a lot of world. He has a universe. So that can get tricky because when you're dealing with fans, they know these things. So one of the ways we approach solving that was called the interjections. And they're sort of things we can match and respond to at any point in a conversation. Because like a human being, at any point you can ask him about many aspects of his past or what's going on with him, and he can respond to those, then segue back to the story and keep the narrative moving. One thing that we can do that always works wonderfully is using state to remember things that have happened. Things that have been said, how many times something's happened. We can start to customize the content down the line based on things people have said earlier. And as a result, you kind of get this wonderful progression in the relationship. When you're dealing with, you know, Pullstring, which is a very sophisticated platform, and Skype, which is an incredibly sophisticated platform, you often find sort of interesting ways to push it a little bit. So one of the things we found was we could put animated GIFs into the experience. So we figured out a way to simulate that you were driving a buggy on the surface of Triton, and we could use the animated GIFs as a live camera of what you were doing. And it's one of the more interesting things we've ever done visually. It's incredibly exciting.
Scott's amazing. If anybody saw his tech talk
Wednesday night,
he's a guy that basically writing background, non-technical guy. Now he's, you know, building bots for Oren. Pretty amazing story there.
He's actually down at our booth. If you want to visit us after the talk as well, too. You want to hang out with Scott and learn about who you can.
You know, he touched on GIFs there at the end, and I think that's, adults read books, and they're mainly text-based, but, you know, kids had so much content, so much richness in the books they got to read. We're seeing definitely the bots that people are creating, the more richness they put into them, the more media, the more they think about audio, they think about the interaction between potentially a web view and the canvas, really can go way beyond then just dialogue. It adds a lot. So I think it's really interesting with Doctor Strange how you guys thought about gamifying the experience, not just from a richness, but also just from the standpoint of, like, how do you get somebody to come back the next time? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you didn't mention Doctor Strange, talking about Doctor
Who. Doctor Who.
Doctor Strange was also on Skype, but that was 6 months ago, different doctor. Doctor Who is an episodic agenda that's live now, in fact. At the end of each one of the episodes that you enjoy chatting back and forth to him, we want you to move on to the next one as well, too. And the concept of cliffhangers is very common in fiction and film and television in general as well, too. That's true here. In particular, there's some puzzles in the Doctor Who agenda coming up that are relatively complex. So I will not talk about the details in this talk here, but if episode 5 comes up, pay close attention, because you're going to be quizzed in episode 6 on things as well, too. But the idea of giving users and audiences things to bridge them across the experience to come back as well, too, is certainly a very important consideration in design of any serialized bit of fiction. You can see that played out very directly in the Who experience right now.
Yeah, I think games are, you know, you don't expect to see games in the middle of a transaction on a website or an app, but they really truly make sense inside of a conversation. I think that's what's unique. Another one unique thing about bots, something that you should try to do, is gamify that experience. You know, and it's a way you may get two or three more interactions with a user, and it can really change things. We talked about GIFs to simulate action and motion. I think one of the other really cool things that you can do now in chat, which you don't typically think about, is managing multiple characters. How did you guys do that? How was that done?
I guess there are two parts to this. Pullstring has for a while supported the idea of authoring different characters that can simultaneously talk back and forth to a single user. So we've had that in the system for a while on our side. When it came to Doctor Who, which is an ensemble cast piece, to bring in different characters from the Who fiction into the conversation was an important part of what we've delivered to market now. I think that offers a lot of variety to users who want to talk to different characters. It also importantly offers a chance for the characters that, let's say you have two or three that are on the bot side talking to a single user. I'll get to the multi-user thing in a second, but talking to a single user. If you have two or three characters on your side that you're in control of back and forth, you can actually use that to steer the conversation in a way you can't when you throw it open to the user directly. Because they can be like, hey, let's talk about this, are you sure? Yeah, about that, and move back. That exchange with the two, three folks who are on the bot side that you built, the two characters there, is an important way to change themes and present to the user new ways to go that feel very natural, the transitions go. On the other side, you can have multiple users as well, too. And so we've had some other bots we built with Skype, Jesse Himani being one of them, commonly get added to group chat sessions. That's sort of a fun bit of business because that character will hang around with the 5 or 10 folks in the group chat and sort of just dive in and offer some jokes as they go along as well, too. And that's a surprisingly retentive agenda. Some of the folks who added her over a year ago are still talking to her in their group chats, often with friends in the teen to late 20-something demographic, quite enjoy that character as a bot in their group chats and have for over a year now. Because she just kind of hangs back there and offers little bits of wisdom about her life as well into the course of the conversations, too. So both work on the multiple character side of the bot and multiple user side.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up groups, because I think a lot of times people don't think about the notion that their bot might be used within a group. Right. And it's an entirely different experience for not just the people in the group, but really what the bot has to be able to do.
Well, as a bot designer, just to comment on that, in that agenda, you're suddenly no longer responsible for the whole conversation hanging on you. Because there are 8 other folks talking back and forth, you're the 9th.
Yeah.
So the way you can just sort of have your bot come in, I guess it's softer, without as fully committed a way to hold the theme of the conversation, is also a very, it's a wonderful thing as a designer to have both of those options there. So I just want to make that point to those folks who haven't tried before. Building a bot in a multiple group setting is a different agenda and can be quite successful as well, too.
And I think it goes for more than just like these story bots. It can also go for like the chef bot, what do you want to have for dinner tonight? Or a travel bot, where does this look like a good flight to take? So there's a bunch of our partners that are using groups now, and you really see the multiples of engagement go up when you put a bot into a group.
And retention too. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Of course it's fun building bots with you, Oren, but you know, oftentimes we're on really tight schedules. We have not always the biggest budgets. We have...
come on, you're Microsoft. Let's go. Come on.
You'd be surprised.
Make it rain, buddy. Come on.
But, you know, the other thing is, like, even though you're in San Francisco, I'm in Palo Alto, oftentimes the content is somewhere else. It could be Los Angeles, it could be New York, it could be London. And often those teams, there's teams there that we're working with. And, you know, it can put a lot of strain on a team when they can't get together and quickly make decisions. You can't do things as quickly. You have to wait for the, you know, a round trip around the sun, all that sort of thing. So what are some of the things that we can tell the audience about that we did with these bots to make those decisions go faster and also make just a better experience?
Well, I'll start with the concept of casting to strength. And this is the thing that Pollstring as a company has approached since we started, but really comes from my time at Pixar. So at Pixar, the world's best computer graphics scientists were used to build tools for the world's best animators, whether they could or couldn't read email, to express animation in the films. And we built Pollstring as a way to get the world's best NLP, the world's best intent recognition, and the concepts and techniques and craft from computer conversation in the hands of folks who understand how to use words. So playwriters, screenwriters, copywriters at agencies, folks who got a 4 or 5 in the AP English test in high school, folks who understand how to craft in language and celebrate that contribution as a complement to the contribution of all the great computer science work in the past 5, 10, and 15 years, that is the craft and the techniques and technology behind synthetic conversation. So from that perspective, you know, getting both of those groups together to build a bot is one of the important ways that you can efficiently work, because you're not either... Often you see copywriters mail bombing engineering staff to fix the dialogue and trying to, like, in Word or Excel express what the dialogue tree is by sending off the engineering us to parse that, like, mentally and then map that into Python code. That's just kind of a complex way to work in general. The crafting of dialogue and dialogue trees belongs to the person who understands the character and what they're talking about. The techniques of intent recognition and NLP belong in the PhDs in computer science who give that gift to the world as well, too. So that's an important part about the system design we bring to the table. If you do that right, then the right folks can do the right tasks, and that generally works much more efficiently, broadly speaking. But I will also talk to you a second about Pollstring and Skype, too, here. Pollstring is built so many folks can work on a similar bot project simultaneously. They can do that in the same office or different offices. So in both these cases, we had folks working at the London UK office, some in Palo Alto, some in San Francisco, and one or two here in Seattle. And in Pollstring, you can do that. Check out part of it, lock part of the dialogue tree, nerd out about it, check it back in, do that with your coworkers, and merge properly, which is actually very hard in a thing that involves data and behavior together to get that right. Those of you who built source control systems before will appreciate that. But at the same time doing that, since we happen to be working with Skype anyway, we find Skype's quite open on our desktops all the time. So that the writing staff over at ReadWords, which is one of the agencies we work with in London, Scott in San Francisco, and Stephen down in Palo Alto, keep hanging out in a group Skype on their desktops while nerding out and Pollstring, working on the bot project itself, chatting and arguing and defending dialogue choices or not, as they're actually building it and checking it in live as well, too. It was a really cool way for us to work, and Skype kind of gave it to us for free.
Yeah, and you can even have a video call if you need to see somebody's face and make a decision quickly and move on to the next thing. I think it really speeds up development quite a bit.
People
would
often grab like video clips and also for who, like, and throw them in, or Heston, and throw them into the Skype room so we can watch them back and forth at the same time to go work in a section as well. Also work quite seamlessly for us, so it's super cool.
Yeah. So just kind of to summarize some of these points on, you know, conversation intent and what you want to think about as you kick off a new project. Again, really think about bots as being narrow and deep and being able to kind of cover a particular topic and push everything else to the side. You may want to come up with some, you know, fun ways that you can reroute people into conversation, but in general, focus on just being great at what people would expect from a chef bot, from a travel bot, from you know, a Doctor Who type experience. I think it's really interesting what Oren says about, you know, it's not just about intent. You have to think about not just what I say, but what the right response would be. And that's often going to be modified by where we are in the conversation, what just got said, where, you know, what the user may want to do next. And there's a lot of tools now in Skype and, of course, in Pollstring to help you do that. You can use the quick replies. You can adjust those every time somebody responds. You can start to think more like making this human conversational. And don't, you know, like I would say, spend a lot of time here. This is probably time well spent in really thinking through the context of what the user just said. Think about all the heuristics, what the user was doing before when they came to this conversation. The next point really is about casting to people's strengths. Pick tools that let people be specialists, be great at writing, be great at developing, be great at the visual arts, you know, and make sure that those are in your process. You can really waste a lot of time by making people do the wrong task. And that just takes away from time better spent on making a great bot.
If someone's sending email describing to you what dialogue should be and your developer receiving it, you're in the wrong place.
Yes.
That should not be an email transaction back and forth.
Yeah, and on the other hand, if you have, you know, you'll find that you need all the time you can get. And so, like, if you have a specialist like Scott who can really think deeply about the storyline, the character development, and those types of things, he's not worrying in the back of his head at 9 o'clock at night, you know, how am I going to pop this dialogue? Or how am I going to, you know, persist state in this particular case? And I think that's really important to unblock those people, give them a chance back to be what they signed up in life to be. Leverage rich media and GIFs. It's not, you know, like Skype has a variety of options for how you want to present them. You can play video in line now. You can play vertical video. You can put cards with carousel cards with content on it. You know, I'd strongly encourage you to think about how you can leverage GIFs, video, sound clips, it provides a lot of richness. And then I think the last point is...
Well, I'm coming there just for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, Skype has always been a place that is audio and video deeply rich. That's the point of Skype to begin with. So it's true to the form. It's true to the canvas you're there. And building a text-based experience is a place to start from, but take advantage of what else Skype can give you there. You can just do so much more on that platform. It's worth playing there. And Skype gives you such great tools for it.
So just kind of wrapping up, and then we'll take some questions. A few things to think about. When you're thinking about building your bot, definitely think about the group experience. Don't forget that people may put your bot into a group, and how should your bot react in that situation? Consider using our conversation add-ins. These can really add a whole dimension to your bot that's much more like using a little mobile website. And they're really easy to do, and it gives you context of the conversation. We give you a conversation ID, and then you can point back to any chat where your add-in has been used. If for those of you that are thinking about creating a video bot, creating kind of a talking bot, a multimodal experience, something I can chat with but then go into a calling mode with, check out our media SDK. It's really one of the most exciting things to come out of Skype and, you know, for a while, particularly. Yep. And I'm excited about it because it leverages a lot of the core technologies that Microsoft has built around AI and the cognitive services. And so go to dev.skype.com and you can download the SDK and have a look. And then, of course, when you're getting ready to publish, you'll want to put your bot on your website. So add the Skype web control to your website. It's just a few lines of code. It doesn't require a download or a plugin. And you can also even publish your bot in Bing search results. So thanks, everybody, for coming today. And I'm just going to open it up for questions to Oren and myself. Thank you, Oren. A lot of fun.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, guys. I will generally say I have a pull-string sticker, pen, and notepad for the best question that gets asked in the next 10 minutes. It's a rare treat. Just came out yesterday. So this is sitting here for the best question that comes up.
Right here.
You want to jump to the microphone so people can hear your question? Yeah.
Probably a simple one. From your extensive experience with the bots that you've already built, do you have any interesting insights on how to actively engage the user from the bot side if there isn't an existing context already?
Do you mean how to, like, they chat out with your bot and then, like, the next day?
Exactly. For example, or some event occurs or some, I don't know, interesting activity opportunity shows up. You know,
this is a good question because some of our partners are starting to use recency, frequency as a heuristic for when's the best time to talk to somebody who just used my bot. So think about setting timers for proactive notifications. First of all, be upfront about that you are going to talk to them. People don't like to be surprised by bots. So we encourage everybody to say, you know, if you want more information, I can send that to you every day. Would you like this? Yes or no? They can say no at that point, of course, and you won't send it to them. That's just an example. But then I'd also encourage you to think about when they were last using your bot and whether or not you want to send it to, you know, essentially 23 hours later or at that same time, because you're more likely to engage with them and be successful if you're really thinking about that as opposed to just some random time in the middle of the night when your server farm's available.
Right. I would add that local time zone is critical. Don't wake people up on the wrong time zone across the world, so be conscious of that. Skype's obviously deeply international in its user base, so you have to consider that very much on Skype for sure. It's not a North American platform at all.
But how do you make it being perceived as a natural thing by the user? I mean, you probably did extensive user testing and interviews.
Yeah, again, I think it comes back to like whatever they were doing last. You want to like make sure that you reference that. And like, hey, it's me again. You know, you were searching for that flight from San Francisco to LAX. We're having deals on that now. Just wanted to let you know. Or, hey, you know, the Heston bot once a month is like, hey, it's, you know, we have 10 new recipes we would love you to try. It's spring. You know, here's my lamb Provençal. You know, and so I think you have to appeal to them at a content level that they care about. And likely whatever they were doing the last time they were with you is something that is... you can start up the conversation again.
As the last comment, then we'll get to you right over there in a sec. Click the open rates on a broadcast message when it comes to a platform like Skype are very, very high compared to an average OS push notification. Because if I actually call you on Skype, you're probably answering the Skype call in general. So user behavior there is different. You'll see that number is surprisingly high, if not shockingly high sometimes, depending on how well you craft that content. But push notifications on the OS level and iOS or Android have gotten to like, what is the static noise, turn it off. If you turn that off on Skype, you would never get a Skype call. Like, you kind of can't turn that off. So note that as a developer, you have a very useful channel that direction, and take that chance responsibly, please.
Yeah, and we do put the users in control, so they can mute notifications from your bot if you abuse that.
Yep. Yeah.
Who's up?
Is there existing content that you can kind of snap in or aggregate to give a bot personality traits? I mean, something like Myers-Briggs or other, you know, personality, psychological traits. And
can we take that one?
Sure.
I've heard of people working on things like that. I've seen no commercial solution for that at this point in time. And now throwing some personal religion back at you. We sort of take the view in pull string that in Photoshop is the digital imagery as we are to building bots, if you will. So I'm going to give you all the tools in Photoshop, all the blur functions. I'm not going to give you a make a sunset. I'm going to give you ways in which to craft dialogue in a very facile way, but not prepackage you a default personality you would take, which will then feel like everybody else took it as well, too. So will that, if that was a commercial product available and you put it in your bot, so would they all do them all, too? And then you're going to sound very similar to others as well. So I try to take the approach of giving you very simple and facile tools to let you easily build that as opposed to prepackage it for you. But I'm not sure there are things like that anyway out. So
would there be a way to make it kind of an undertone? I mean, friends who have specific personality types will react somewhat predictably.
Yeah, I think idea is that we give you the tools so you can build that first one quickly, and then you can leverage that.
Okay.
But is your question, would a given bot drift across 10 different users because you like more sarcasm and you like a more direct conversation, you like a more passive conversation?
Well, that's a different question.
Right.
Is if you can sort of deduce the real person the bot is talking to, is there a way to direct how the bot communicates?
Certainly these projects here as well, and Dr. Strange and other ones we build, do respond differently based on the conversational track. I mean, very much so. That's the point of them. Like, if 20 people all talk to Heston in the next 10 minutes, you would all have different experiences, and Heston will respond or Doctor Who based on what you're saying back in very different ways. And over time, the more things you said, the more specific amongst the dialogue choices will get made based on what you said back. So that's already true today. To the extent that some people might not like Doctor Who, in which case they don't like sci-fi and time travel, so talk to the chef bot instead. Like, I can't fix that problem in some sense, but that is true today. It's depending on how much you want to personalize it and adjust it yourself and build that way.
We have a question over here.
Yes, I think I'm going to tap on the first question. So do you have any best practices that you have identified as how long a conversation on a bot actually has helped to retain a user against user losing interest to use those bots?
Well, how long should you talk back? Yeah. As long as you can.
Yeah. I mean, it really goes to what the goals are for the bot. I mean, we see there's sort of a different goal for like a story bot like Doctor Who versus the UPS bot where I'm trying to, you know, get to a piece of information, and it's, they're more transactional. So I wouldn't go purely based off of length of conversation as the only metric. It really is depends on a couple things. The sort of what you're trying to achieve with your bot, and I would focus probably more on does your bot get used a second time, a third time, and how long was the frequency between when they use it as a method of really gauging engagement. We look a lot at number of interactions with these story bots, and we really like to see them in the 20 to 30 range per session.
Okay, thank you.
A follow-up to that, what tools is Microsoft providing for instrumenting these bots and kind of providing the analytics afterwards to be able to prove, you know, ROI and kind of the user journeys and crashes effectively? What do you have that we can use?
Yeah, we've been working with the bot framework team to, first of all, identify third parties that have kind of off-the-shelf analytics stuff, and there's plenty out there. There's like bot metrics and folks like that. Okay. We work with, you know...
Yeah, I'll take the part of the answer, too.
Yeah, but there's also stuff coming from Microsoft. I don't have details on that, but basically, if you talk to the bot framework guys on the floor, they'll give you more information about that.
Thank you. It's a little bit about the stuff that we built in PullString. We offer analytics for things that are built in PullString as well, too. One of the unique features of that, because we're an authoring environment, hosted runtime, and analytics solution, is we can do things like make, here are the top 10 areas of your content that you expected to be hit that weren't in the past week. You should probably focus on that. Or the top 10 questions that were asked you didn't have a good answer for, and be specific to areas and content you can actually go edit directly and offer those lists very concretely. But that only is available on a platform when you built analytics from the back end all the way up to authoring in the front end.
Got it.
The analytics-only companies will do the best they can with whatever you give them, but they can't know the reason why it got to them.
Got it.
They're just seeing the end results.
There was another one very quickly. To what extent is everything you've described, how does that apply to voice? So with Cortana skills, let's say we wanted to create a bot which also has a Cortana experience or some other voice component. So
strongly and directly supported today. There you go. Boom.
By PullString?
Yeah, hell yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, very much. We've been text to voice the whole time. We support the Microsoft platforms, broadly speaking. So I celebrate that.
Right.
You'll find, though, that there are some differences. Like when you're throwing up animated GIF, in a Skype-based text-based bot, that's going to be a different proposition in an audio-based experience. So those things are largely similar, often in their design structure, but at the leaf nodes of what you're building can be different based on how you're presenting on the end platform. So there is it's not a freebie, copy, paste, and done, ship it. There is some work to do there, but I think largely you'll find the design of what you built is largely useful across both, and PullString supports them both directly.
Yeah, and I think I also mentioned like our meditation bot, which is really truly a headless type experience where it can operate on a, you know, like a speaker type device. So you can go ahead and use third party or, you know, now Cortana also has through bot framework ways that you can author your skill there too.
Thank you. That's good to know. Thank you.
Cool.
I have one question. So can you add insights on your bots like what kind of questions does the user ask the bot? And based on that, you improve your bot responding so actively?
So from PullString side, we'll absolutely surface that to you continuously, minute, hour, day, week, month, pick your favorite time scale. But here are the top 10 things that were asked you did not have a good answer for and give you that list. As far as an unsupervised way, rechanging the content and responding back without supervision, I don't buy that. I think that if you're building Doctor Who or Heston, you don't want those things to just walk off and become some other character. So while I'll suggest to you where to write and suggest to you what you should in fact do, I let you decide to actually, yes, I want that, and poke a button to commit. But you can poke that button every 5 seconds if you want, or once a day or once a week. Your choice about how often you want to republish. But in market, that running thing is stable until you say otherwise. And I strongly sit in that place because I don't want Heston becoming not Heston. He's going to be mad at me about that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, when you're getting ready to launch, you know, spend a lot of time with people that know the subject matter, that can talk to your bot and give you feedback on it before you launch to the general public. And then you can take all those things that generated those fallback responses and feed them back into the core knowledge of what the bot is.
Yeah, deployment on PulseStream, once you've gone at once and pressing publish out to Skype, is the order of a couple of, I don't know, 5 seconds, whatever, from the button press actually being live. So you can do that as often as you'd like. I think you'll probably find to keep yourself sane, you probably want to go aggressively on a once-a-day basis so you can see how Tuesday compared to Wednesday. If you continuously publish, the delta's hard to see, right? So what happened on Tuesday? Okay, let's try it at midnight. What happened on Wednesday? Oh, it's 5% better. Cool. Like, you then know that, as opposed to continually spreading out new content. It's hard to figure out what's happened yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just have one more question. So can we create bots for Skype for Business as well, not just Skype?
Yeah, you can now, actually. They announced it at Build. I'm not the right person to answer your questions about what kinds of bots, but it's available now as a channel on Bot Framework, and if you come down to OP4, where our booth is, they're on the other side.
Okay, thanks.
You're going for the notepad. You're up again. I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
How do you go during the whole development cycle about testing the bot, about making sure that it actually does what you want and achieves the goal that you need? I mean, you had one interesting story regarding a bot, I think, at Microsoft a few months or a year or so ago. How do you make sure that some fiasco like that doesn't happen?
Do you want me to take that one
for you? Well, let me start, and then you can kind of add color. I mean, I think for what bots need two things. One is you need to manage the expectations of the people who are using them. So if your bot's about cooking, you know, like, make sure people know that they're kind of testing it for you, that you should ask it cooking questions. It may seem obvious, but people are like, you want me to talk to this thing? And it's like, okay, I'm going to ask it the weather or stock sports, whatever. So really set expectations of what, and then people will go deep with the bot, and you'll get a lot more valuable learning out of it than just like, oh, we should have planned for people asking for sports scores. I think that's one. I would consider creating rings of testers. You know, you have the core team, then you have people who have heard that you're building this bot, and then you have the, you know, and keep on, you know, maybe on a weekly basis, bringing more and more people to it. But have them really give them specific tasks, things that you want them to try with the bot. I think that's the way to ferret out. It's just sort of like a lot of user testing most of the things. There's other.
I think that's a good, solid answer. And you don't need tens of thousands. You need like 25.
Yeah.
If you got a couple dozen folks to go through it, you will get to a 90% case by like the next day pretty quickly. Okay. If you want to get nerdier than that, sure, you can go more. But it's not a cast of thousands to do that, really.
Okay. But in your tooling, I mean, as I understand it, you as PulseString are offering a tool change to create bots and to manage all the content. Do you have any tools in there that can make sure at least that the logical flow is concise and correct? Or
sure, if you want to run like lint on your, basically, or a logic check that you haven't got loops, anything that comes with the system itself. So the point of authorship, as well as you're committing back there to the, I've made an edit, I'm putting it back in as well, too. Note, error, you have a loop here, you probably want to fix that. Okay. Note, dangling reference, that's not right. So that whole set of debugging stuff runs on commit anyway and presents to you areas that are suspect, as you would compilation errors, you know, warnings versus notifications versus warnings in general, and then you can choose to fix that or not. So we do our best to do anything that can be in a closed form solution. Realize that way, we offer back to you directly as the author, and then hopefully you get that right.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Sounds great.
You win the prize for the best question, because that was the best answer. All right, there we go.
Automated testing?
Yeah. Who asked that question?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, sure. So in PulseString, if you've got your Heston bot sitting there, on the bottom is your chat window, so you can chat back with the bot as you build it. So let's say you chat 30, 40 turns deep and say, save as test. I want to make sure that that set of inputs stays stable across time. Do that for the next 4 dozen things you try to do back and forth, and you can get yourself coverage that way very much by interacting with
like
it well. I guess you're testing the stability of your content.
Yeah, so but in bots,
right, so let's classify the difference. Text and voice are different. In text, you get spelling errors, emoji, and leet speak. In voice experiences, you get ASR errors. But everything's spelled correctly all the time, because ASR get back to you. So different class of errors to the question earlier about text and voice. There are different things you have to do in those two circumstances. To build a error condition case that handles the homophone problem, which, there, based on what the ASR gives you back, is a bit, my head explodes. So instead, those three things become the synonyms of each other.
And so which at Halloween, W-I-T-C-H, versus which the rest of the year, W-H-I-C-H, just become the same word effectively, and they synonymize, I'll make that up for you here, so that you don't fail, but both are success cases, if that makes sense on that side. On the LEET speak side, when someone's like L-A-T-R-R for later, you have to handle those as goodbye synonyms, if you will. So the text-based North American normative English is actually Spanglish crossed with emoji. And that's the dialogue space you have to work in. It's not Webster's. So common vernacular in text-based language is quite a different thing than we speak up here. But that's what you have to design for as part of the words you build in the NLP structures of personaling yourself.
So you're just moving the paradigm more to the design side as opposed to the testing side?
Yeah, well, it's sort of unknowable what the smiley emoji means. But it is knowable in the context of Heston versus who. Like, if you're in the Heston bot and you get a smiley emoji, that means, like, I want to make the recipe, as opposed to, like, that was a funny wisecrack to the joke bot. So that's part of why that's a design tool. There's no the quest for the definitive, always applicable answer to what the smiley emoji means in all conversation, I think, is a false quest. That's a false idol. Like, you have to design that in the course of a cooking experience with Heston talking about awesome scrambled eggs or with time travel with Doctor Who. And that's how we built the tool the way it was. Does that make sense? More questions.
Do you have any suggestions on naming your bots?
Naming your bots?
Metal lawyer. No.
IP rights matter here, yeah.
I think, first of all, brands don't make good names for bots. So bots are conversational. I think you start out with, like, this is the Acme bot, then people aren't going to ever kind of relate to it. So pick a name in any, come up with an original name and have that represent the thing that you're actually talking to, the bot.
Yeah, with Who and Heston, it's easy because they're obvious characters.
Yeah.
So there's like not a discussion actually at all. I guess maybe just to talk about other things in the space that I've seen. When those guys at Poncho a year ago built that weather forecasting cat thing, they called it Poncho, not weather forecasting cats, or not weather. So there's a risk there, like, what the hell's a poncho? I don't know, it's weather forecasting cat. But they gave it a particular name people associated with that concept, as opposed to weather, cat, which is like, I don't know what that means. So you're in Skype, you are talking to other people is what you're doing most of the time. And I should have made the point of adjacency. Can I just do that for 30 seconds? One hugely missed point that the folks are still here about building bots is that you are always and forever adjacent to like a billion conversations between people and actual people. And you're the one that's the person in the bot sitting there. So you're constantly judged against all the other actual conversations you've been having on Skype for like a decade and a half deep, and now a bot shows up. So that should give you a strong reason why you should give your bot a name, like all of us have names, like a Skype name, which is fine, which aren't actual English names, but they're Skype IDs you use to call each other up. That's how Skype works. So use that as a strong agenda in that meeting to debate the name of your bot, because that's where you're going to be up in a platform full of a billion other people who are talking back and forth with their own IDs, and like your bot's like weather. You're like, how about like Dave Schwartz, the weatherman from Weather Channel, who I love? Like, give me a name of somebody.
So go with Susie, not tech support.
Tech support would be not a person I would typically call to be excited to talk to. That's right. I would think. Not the DAG and tech support guys, but that's my opinion.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's a good idea for a bot. Name your bot.
Name your bot. Last question, I think. Right, we're running out of time here.
Yep.
We're in red
right
zone.
Out of time.
Oh, okay. Last question.
30 seconds.
So I've been working with voice a lot, with the Cortana and Alexa. And one of the big problems is retention is pretty depressing. It's like 2 to 3% two-week retention. And one of the issues is that there's no push element on like a text conversation. You can't have the speaker open up and say, there's a new recipe for you or whatever. So how would you approach keeping users engaged in that environment?
I think that the platforms themselves, I'll throw Microsoft and everybody else under the bus here too, have not because it's a hard question. How do you solve the phone ringing problem? You're asking to ring the phone or ring the Harman Kardon speaker or ring your Echo. And like in my house, I don't want that thing ringing. I'm at dinner right now with my family. So to actually send a broadcast message out is you, in the audio realm, interrupting that room. Someone goes, oh, that thing woke up. Yes, Harman Kardon speaker. Tell me about a new recipe. When I'm like in a fight with my wife at the time. Like that's not super convenient. So I don't know the answer to that question, but that's a platform thing. There's not much you can do about that until
you're
the
referring to chatbots.
Well, not
no,
to
voice
the
things. Voice things.
Or voicing.
Yeah. Of it. More like what strategies can you use to keep people engaged without having that ability?
Got it.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the rephrasing. Okay.
Yeah. I think, first of all, you can use, in the case of Doctor Who, used cliffhangers.
Yeah.
You know, so you set a mental bookmark in somebody's mind that if I come back next week, I'm going to get a reward. So I think hooks and rewards are really important with bots, with any kind of service like this that you're building. So it was just sort of, you know, always think through, like, what is the next thing that I want the user to do, and how can I, in the course of what the flow that they're in right now, ensure that they will come back and do that.
And we got
it's one of the best ways to do it in my mind.
We certainly exhibited in pull string numbers that are 10 times that on week one retention and week two retention, 10 times higher. But that's because they're episodic in nature for other stuff we built. Yeah, sure.
Thank you all for staying, and
thank
I appreciate
you
coming to Build. If you have any questions, feel free to contact us.